Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, in Sicily, you nibble on angels' breasts.
In Italy, you can sink your teeth into some monk's balls.
And in France, you can savour the aroma of a fresh nun's fart.
Oof, it's pastries! And welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Manu, and I'm here with my fellow QI elf, Jack. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. We're also joined this week by baker, cookbook writer, and winner of the first ever series of The Great British Bake Off, Ed Kimber.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Do you get asked about that first series all the time? It's many years ago now.
It is, I mean, it's 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So it does feel kind of strange in some ways that I still have to talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it is something I'm very proud of and will always be very thankful to.
Of course,
but
yeah,
it does feel like it was a complete lifetime ago. I did feel like I was about 12.
Have you seen any of the internationally franchised versions?
Someone told me the other day I should watch the Japanese one. Apparently it's really, really good. But
wow.
I didn't even know there was a Japanese version.
No, I didn't either.
The French one's incredibly high standard.
Of course,
they look like professional pastry chefs.
Mm-hmm.
The American one is kind of the opposite. It's really interesting. Their baking is really homespun. But they're so competitive. It's wild.
It's such an interesting cultural contrast.
Cause massively.
The Americans always see our one and they're like, oh, they're all so twee and helpful. And it's so low stakes.
Nice.
Because the American one's like, dun, 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 dun.
Well, also, they win a lot of money.
Yeah, really.
Every time I talk to an American about it, they're shocked that I did this reality show on UK TV and I won a trophy.
Yeah.
Also, I'm the only one who ever won a trophy.
Really?
Everyone else won a kickstand.
Oh.
I won a real... I think they probably forgot. It's a really basic, like, metal trophy with ribbons on it. But the Americans, like, you didn't win any money. You weren't paid to do it. No, we did it for the joy.
No, do you still have the trophy?
Yeah, but people think it should be on display, but it's in my loft and it's like covered in dust.
I like that.
Is it like the picture of Dorian Gray? If you take it down, your baking skills will suddenly wither away.
That's what has to stay in the house.
Yeah. So I described you as a baker. What is your speciality?
I always say that if it contains sugar, I'm good with it. I really love trying anything and everything, which is kind of why I like working for myself.
Yeah.
Because the reason I hated working in kitchens is the repetition.
Mm.
Whereas working for myself, I can just go, oh, that seems really cool to make. I'm going to go make it.
That's
so over the years, I've written a book on French pastry. I've written a book on kind of American style baking.
Ooh.
I've just written a book on chocolate, which comes out next year.
Oh.
So I have these kind of hyper obsessions.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And for a while, that's all I'll make.
So pastries,
mm-hmm.
This is quite a broad topic.
Yes.
Very big, very big.
So we kind of narrowed it down, I think, to sweet things.
Donuts are also a pastry.
Depends on which country you're talking about.
Oh.
Yeah. The French call more things pastry because of how it's who makes it.
Mm.
So often like a bread or a cake or a pastry.
Mm-hmm.
So it does differentiate it between like the boulangerie
mm-hmm.
and the patisserie.
Yeah.
So it does, it's slightly more complicated.
And then you have the viennoiserie, which is kind of between the two.
Yeah. Viennoiserie basically means yeasted pastry.
Yeah.
So that's what a croissant would be. So anything that kind of feels like it's made in the croissant realm is viennoiserie.
And even just rolling back, can we define pastry from the start? Is it always flour, water, and some fat?
I think it would be flour, water, fat, and salt at its core. But then most pastries you can add or take out sugar.
Sure.
You could take those ingredients and make a flatbread.
Well, yeah.
So it is, exactly. I think it's very hard to pin down exactly what it means.
Such a nebulous concept.
Yeah.
But also, you have that thing where in days gone by, well, that sounds really highfalutin. In olden times, like things would be called cake that would now be a bread. So it used to be that cakes were yeasted because there was no such thing as baking powder. So the definition of things like that changes loads, which is why I think it's hard to pin down. I always say that things like, you know a pastry when you see it, but defining it is not the easiest thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I am a layman. We'll get that out of the way first of all. Like, I am an enthusiastic chef, but I rarely bake. Do you, Manu?
Yeah, I bake cakes, but not pastry.
I think pastry has a reputation of being intimidating and hard to make.
Knowing what I know about how say viennoiserie is made, just like the layering and the time and the there's so many steps.
Yeah.
I think for an amateur cook or baker, it is quite intimidating. With any food that we look at, I'm like, okay, who invented it, inverted commas, which is always hard to do.
Mr. Kipling, no, that's okay. He invented cakes.
But it's particularly hard to do with pastry because, like, say, bread is one of the oldest foods.
Yeah.
There's someone who said that, like, puff pastry was invented by a French chef called Claude Gilly in the 1600s. But then there's other countries that have had, like, versions of...
The only reason I was laughing is because as soon as you said there's a story in France, I was like, oh, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
French pastries love a story.
I found, like, such a detailed chronology. Like, in this
year... Did you find the name of the person?
Yes.
There's always a name.
It's mad. Like, and I was
the
like...
The pastry's assistant. Wow,
it's always an accident, isn't it? It's like we accidentally invented puff pastry when I left a piece of butter next to some bread and then it just magically combined.
You're not wrong because, like, ganache is an accident. You know what ganache actually means?
No?
Ganache means idiot in French.
Oh, I love it.
The chef named it after his assistant who accidentally knocked some cream into chocolate.
Classic.
But so many French pastries have an accident origin story that it's like, I wish they were all true. I just can't believe any of them are true.
Like, the names are ridiculous as well. So, say the angel's breast that we mentioned at the start from Sicily, like, those are called that because they're like, they're boob shaped, basically. Yeah.
There is a lot of boob shaped pastries randomly.
Yeah, they know what's up. But yeah, and apparently they got like little nipples on them as well. They're really going for it.
Okay. And the monk's balls as well as a kind of anti-establishment statement, I think.
And were they shaped? Was the pastry shaped?
Yeah, the monk's balls are basically very little. They're testicle sized.
Ah,
you can
nice.
Picture a testicle. And they're filled with dulce de leche.
As
all
balls are.
I love it.
Yeah, I don't know about you, mine are.
One of the other things I think about when I think about pastry is just like a special occasion food. They're normally quite expensive for the amount of food you're getting.
Yeah.
I guess because like they're labor intensive.
What would you be willing to pay for a croissant? Nothing fancy.
So you've got
just a plain butter croissant.
Okay. In London, I'd pay at least £2.50.
Okay.
Any less than that, and it's going to be.
But what would be the most you would pay?
Oh, well, sky's the limit. I mean.
Oh, no. I got angry about having to pay £4 for a baguette the other day. Oh, so that's.
Not even close.
Oh, what?
This is the most expensive that I know of, and I do believe it is the most expensive. It's £8 for a plain croissant. It's from Cedric Gray, who's kind of. These days, he's viewed as like one of the world's best pastry chefs. Mm-hmm. His other pastries are around £15-17. They're much more involved, sweet-based dishes, but a plain croissant for £8.
That's
I don't think I could justify
it. I was going to say, have you tried it?
Yes, I have. I didn't try for it. Because I don't think I would be willing to pay £8 for a croissant. Because it was very nice, but it's £8.
Yeah.
You know, but I can go and get an amazing croissant for £2.50.
It's not three times better than...
No, exactly.
Speaking of expensive pastries, we're not talking about like enormous croissants or croissants covered in gold leaf or anything.
I hate them. I
really?
Hate them with a passion.
Oh, goodness. So how big are we talking? I'm picturing it in like a travel pillow.
Pillow size. They're even, like full pillow size. Like, they're like ginormous. It's an Instagram trend, 100%.
Of course.
And I think it's trying to jump on something that will be the next big thing.
Of course.
And ironically, the next big thing was giant croissants. But you can't make a really good croissant or a pan of chocolate massive.
Even with a massive oven.
Yeah, but what?
No, but they're like £25 and they're humongous. And all you ever see is people holding them up, taking pictures. I've never once seen anyone actually eating it. And I just think...
Give it to the pigeons.
It's purely about social media. It's nothing to do with quality and it drives me insane.
Why would the quality be worse just because it is so big?
Because it's harder to make a croissant that can fully puff up and get a really nice light interior.
Okay.
It will be much heavier. The lamination will kind of sink on itself.
Mm-hmm.
It will also get baked way more on the outside than it can on the inside. So you're almost guaranteed a more gummy inside or a very dry outside. To me, it's just a bad idea all around. And I don't like things that are clearly driven just for social media and not for deliciousness.
You know what? I wouldn't mind a croissant pillow though.
You might have like a slightly greasy head when
The French obviously take their pastries very seriously. Until recently, bakers were mandated by law to take separate holidays in the summer. So you'd either take your holiday in July or your holiday in August, and they were split 50-50, so they'd never run out of bread.
But what if you were married to another baker and then they were in and you would never take holidays
at this?
You
can't work at the same bakery. You have to work at different bakeries so that you can both have the same holiday.
Yeah. And in fact, during COVID, bakers were officially designated essential workers.
Oh. As it should be.
As it should be, you know, right?
We deserve claps at 8 p.m.
You know,
we deserve all the praise.
So they didn't get furloughed.
Oh, well done. Let's crack into our first lunchbox, and this week is Ed.
So I have brought a lesser-known pastry. Oh. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favourites. It's called a Puy d'Amour, which is basically a cup of puff pastry that is filled with custard and then kind of brûléed on top.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
The reason I brought these is because this is homemade puff pastry. I think often, especially on TV and in cookbooks, often readers at home are told, don't worry about making puff pastry, just buy it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's truth to that, but I think everybody should try and make puff pastry at least once.
Okay.
Partly because I really enjoy making it, but also I think it just tastes way better. But it is complicated, but there are ways to make it much easier.
I was going
to
say, you've presented these so beautifully.
Dig in.
I'm still afraid, like, looking at that, I'm still like, oh, that must be really tricky to make. I've still got the fear.
Okay, why don't you dig in to the Puy d'Amour, give them a try, see what you think. These are made with rough puff pastry, which is the easier form, which is what I recommend most people at home make.
Oh my God, Ed, those are beautiful.
Thank you.
Mm. Oh, they're so good. And straight back to France when I did my year abroad. We had a lot of pastries.
Puy d'Amour means well of love. Wells of love, yeah.
Puy d'Amour, yeah.
And the idea is they're kind of meant to look like a well, but
they do look like wells.
They also have a slightly more salacious background.
Really?
Oh. Supposedly, the origin of them is a euphemism for a woman's private parts.
Ew.
I know, kind of gross. And originally they were filled with jam.
Okay.
Not great. So the original version of the Puy d'Amour is attributed to Vincent de la Chapelle, head chef to Madame de Pompadour, who reportedly delighted in the kind of culinary double entendre.
Ooh.
And apparently at the time, food was often kind of double entendre. It was scandalous. And I think that was probably the thing of like, oh, let's make something to excite, you know.
Yes.
It was probably quite a sad thing of like, let's excite the ladies, you know.
I see.
But yes.
No, I read a fascinating essay all about the invention, basically, of dessert in France.
Ooh.
In the Middle Ages, you would have sweet and savoury pastries pretty much for all of your meals. And then in the 18th century, there was a lot of decadence.
Mm-hmm.
And so at big fancy balls and feasts, you'd have incredibly intricate sugar paste sculptures. And there was one record of a guy who made the severed head of Louis XV out of sugar.
Whoa.
And the Rock of Gibraltar with soldiers having a battle on, and all edible.
Wow.
And this is kind of the trigger for the French Revolution, because like after the French Revolution, the Ancien Régime fell, people were like, all this decadent stuff, we're Republicans now, we want basic pastries could be made potentially by anyone.
I think the person you're talking about is the chef Antonin Carême.
Yeah.
And he is so famous for these incredible displays. And you can find all of the drawings of them.
Yes.
He was called the king of pastry. And there's literally these incredible displays. Like, even today, you would think, how is anybody making this out of sugar? And it's just wild that they were able to do that. And you can easily see that everyday Frenchman going, I have an apple or I maybe have a potato and like, this is what you're eating. Would strike a revolution in anyone's heart. But they're very hard to find. You don't find them in many pastry shops.
Mm.
But in Paris, there's a shop called Stora.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Stora is the oldest operating pastry shop in Paris, if not all of France.
Oh.
It was set up by the pastry chef to Louis XV, I think.
Ooh.
And it is the place that supposedly invented rhubarb, which is also not true, but that's the story.
Okay.
And it's still the old shop. It's incredibly old, tiny. You walk past it and think nothing of it. But they make a Puy d'Amour is delicious. Mm. It's just really vanilla-y, beautiful custard and a kind of creme brulee top. So good. Mm. But this is a very rough form. I made this on a very hot day.
Oh.
So even when it's hot and difficult, you can make a good puff pastry that doesn't have to be like
the flake pastry. On that pastry is incredible.
If this is your like subpar game, then I'd love to see your best stuff. Amazing.
Okay, let's talk about puff pastry. Puff pastry is all about lamination, which is a fancy word for rolling and folding. So you start with a dough, which is called the de trompe, which is basically just a basic dough. There's nothing complicated about it. It's what we talked about earlier. It's flour.
Short for Donald Trump.
Yes, Donald de Trump, yes. Yeah. And basically all you're going to do is take this dough, you roll it out, you fold it, like kind of folding a letter.
But I guess unlike a piece of paper, once you've folded it, you can then stretch it out to the same.
Yeah, and you do it many, many times until the dough is super flaky. And when you bake it, it will puff up because the water kind of creates steam and it separates out the layers and you get this deliciously flaky layer. But basically it's flour, it's water, and then fat. And then salt and sugar.
Yeah.
And you make a dough that's very rough. It doesn't have to be worked very hard. So you don't have to knead it if you're not a fan of kneading. Right. That's great. And then basically you have to sandwich butter into it and then roll it and fold it.
That's the secret, right?
And that's the tricky part because you don't want the butter to be too warm because if it's too warm, the butter gets absorbed into the dough and it won't puff up and flake.
Mm.
But if it's too cold, when you try and roll it out, the butter breaks and then you get subpar lamination. It is a time laborious process. Yeah. You know, if you're making, say, a croissant, it's a 3-day process.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can make really good puff pastry at home way simpler than you can in a restaurant or a bakery. You can make what's called rough puff pastry.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of creating this perfect block of butter that gets neatly sandwiched together, you just chop the butter into pieces, throw it through the flour, make the dough with the butter already in it, as if you're just making any other kind of pastry.
Okay, yeah.
And then you roll it out multiple times again, but then throw it in the fridge, it's done. So it's way quicker, it's way easier. But if you kind of did a cross section of it, it wouldn't be like as perfectly neat and ordered. It would be a bit over the place.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Still super flaky and still super delicious, but way, way easier. Okay. Also, the texture of puff pastry changes massively depending on how many times it's folded. So puff pastry was used to make milfoy, and milfoy means 1,000 leaves.
Yeah.
And the idea is that puff pastry would have 1,000 layers.
Wow.
Most of the time it has a lot less.
Yes.
It's very easy to make it with over 1,000 layers.
Really?
Has anyone ever sued the milfoy?
They counted
them out and they only had 998 and I want my money back.
So when you make pastry, you have dough and you put butter on top of it and then you fold the dough on top. So that's 3 layers.
Yeah.
But when you then roll it out and fold it, you're extending the layers. But then dough touches dough because you folded it over.
So it
used to be that those two pieces of dough would be 2 layers. But now most people count that as one. So the numbers of layers have changed.
It makes kind of harder.
It's so complicated. I'm spending all my time thinking about layers, but there is a lamination calculator online
to check how many layers
I'm getting. Yeah. So the way you traditionally make puff pastry is what's called 6 single turns. So a single turn or a letter fold is when you fold the dough, that kind of like a business letter. So you fold it in 3. That is the classic single fold you do in puff pastry. And you use 6 of them. And that creates a dough that has 1,459 layers. So milfoy and a half.
Yeah.
But when I do what's called a double fold or a book fold. So you roll the dough out and then you take the 2 ends, you fold them into the middle, and then you fold it again like closing a book. So you get 4 layers. I do 4 of those, and that only gets you 513 layers.
Okay.
The reason milfoy is so light is because it has so many layers, so you can cut it with a fork more easily, whereas when it has less layers, the layers are thicker, so it's got a bit more chew, a bit more texture, but it's still super flaky. So most of the time, 6 single turns takes forever to make, so I never do it, but 4 double is kind of my go-to, or 3 double.
When you talk about the process, it's just like such a human thing to make an incredibly complex bonkers yeah. process.
I am constantly obsessed by how things get invented. Yeah. Mm. How on earth did someone go, oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this butter, I'm going to roll it incredibly thin 1,000 times. How did we as humans go, this is what
I reckon that's actually the origin of a lot of the, oh, it was done by accident myth. Because no, people don't want to like admit that they were actually just fiddling around with these things.
Yeah. But then, yeah, what are you doing with that pit? Don't look at me.
I'm adding one more turn.
I'm masturbating. Don't come in.
It's time for our second lunchbox, and that is mine. I have brought...
Oh, cool.
Cuillamon.
Cuillamon.
Cuillamon. Have you guys heard of cuillamon?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
One of my favourites.
I have not. Can you explain?
Oh, if you like butter, this is the pastry for you. So it's from Brittany. It literally translates to butter cake. So yeah, it's also been nicknamed gold in butter. Because Brittany is really famous for producing really nice butter. Mm. The cows are super well fed and they've got really rich grass. They're like very into the butter making process, like artisanal, lots of really good salt. And then we have another story of where
it comes from.
A very specific story.
So, I think I know the story.
Actually. Oh, really? Well, here we go. It's from a small fishing town called Durnez, and apparently it was invented 160 years ago. So there was a baker, very specific, there was a baker called Yves René Scordia, and he ran out of things to sell in his bakery.
Invented by accident.
Oh, no.
There's always an emergency as well. Yeah, an accident, an emergency, or some random ingredient left over.
So he's been a bit of a ganache and had not ordered it, not ordered in enough. And in a panic, he grabbed some leftover bread dough and what he had around, which was a lot of butter and a lot of sugar. And he started folding it in the kind of lamination puff pastry style. So it was really, really popular. And today there's an There's an association of the Cuillamon in that fishing village, and it was formed in 1999, and it was dedicated to preserving this technique of making the Cuillamon and promoting the pastry. And now I had not heard of it until a few years ago, and I think it's becoming more and more popular.
I think it's kind of almost a standard in bakeries now. You can find it in any French bakery now. They have changed a lot from the traditional version, but it has become like a go-to. I mean, it's sugar, it's butter, it's caramel, everyone's going to like it. I'm not so surprised.
Good. But it's, when I was looking up the ingredients,
You don't.
Oh, it's so funny because I told one of my best friends who's a baker that I was going to be bringing this pastry, and she's like, that's the only one I will not eat.
What?
Because she's made them and she's like, I eat croissant, I make croissant, I know how much butter's in them. With the cuillamon and the sugar, she's like, I can't, it's too much.
I mean, there's a reason why a lot of the ones sold today, like the non-traditional versions, are really small. I think it is probably because they are so sweet, so rich, that people's palate is like, let's have a mini one rather than... Because originally they were massive.
Yeah, no, they're like cakes.
Cakes,
size.
Yeah, really? They were made and they were served as wedges.
Mm-hmm. Just on the association. That's one of the hardest words to say in French.
Association. L'association de Cuillamon of Dornigny.
Speaking of like French association of food, there's a thing called the Confraternité des Lichonneurs de Tarte Tatin.
Ooh.
And it is translates as the Brotherhood of Tarte Tatin Lickers.
Oh, wow.
Are we going to start a society of
Cuillamon lickers?
Yeah.
Shall we dig in?
Yes, please.
Oh, they rock hard as well. All that crunchy butter.
Whoa.
It's a dentist's nightmare.
It's so sticky.
Quite salty as well.
Well, that's the Brittany thing. They make excellent butter and they make excellent salt. And so it's in everything they make. So like salted caramel comes from Brittany.
Of course,
because it's like a great celebration of both things.
So Cuillamons, they're cousin to the croissant, would you say?
I think that was one of the things I wanted to talk about. Like, we've spoken a lot about lamination, but focusing on the butter, do you butter a croissant?
Oh, I actually don't.
Absolutely.
The pastry obviously contains butter.
A lot of butter.
Yeah,
exactly.
We've got, it's on average like 30 to 40% butter, isn't it?
No way. By weight.
Yeah.
I've heard similarly, French people don't butter their croissant.
Like, missing out.
I know.
I'm not buttering a queen amman.
That, okay, that's
that
your
feels
line.
Like a step too far.
That's the way to go, though. If you were like death by given queen the death sentence, and they were like,
so good.
It's the electric chair, or you can butter a queen amman and have a heart attack. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. So I've read there's a culture in France of distinguishing between proper butter, like all butter, croissant au beurre. And then like margarine croissants with the shape. So if you're making a butter croissant, you make it straight. And then if you're making one with margarine in the dough instead of butter, you make it in the like classic curved shape.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So often you get like the curved margarine one for your kids and then you have the fancy.
Yeah, I lived in France for a while and it's amazing seeing the word croissant used as a, because croissants is basically growth. So like in terms of economic growth, you'd be reading this dry article about
no
the French economy and croissants. It would talk about croissants because on the graph, it looks like a crescent shape.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It's curved. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And I did a maths degree and they would always say like, the croissance exponentielle.
Just on the straight and the curve difference. So apparently we've been making French people quite angry because...
I think it's quite easy to do.
with our pastry. Because a while ago, UK supermarkets decided to stop making curved croissants because people were complaining they were firstly really hard to cut in half, like slice in half, and secondly really hard to spread butter or jam on.
Okay.
Which is not the French way, but it is the English way.
It is.
But here's the big drop. Like, croissants, not French.
No,
what?
Not French at all.
The theory is that it comes from an Austrian tradition, the Kipfel. And there was one specific Austrian baker. In fact, we should address the term viennoiserie because that means... Viennese goods. Yeah. It means like, from Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
We can pin it all back to this guy, August Zang. He came over. There was a shortage of bakers in France at the time. They were talking 1848. Mm-hmm. So they got loads of Viennese bakers over and they introduced all sorts of new techniques. And one of the guys was August Zang. He was an artillery officer and then he was bored of that. He seemed like a man who got very bored, and you'll realise why very soon. So at age 30, he went to France, opened a bakery, and he started adapting the Kipfel, and he started using the laminate dough that we would recognise today. And he also pioneered the use of the steam oven. After a few years, he befriended some journalists and decided to open a newspaper back in Austria.
As you do.
My next step in my career.
It was called Die Presse. And it made, I think it's still going, and it made such huge profits that then when he got bored of that... He bought a mine, became a mining magnate in southeastern Austria.
That's mad.
And he died a millionaire in his 70s or 80s. And his obituary says banker, entrepreneur, miner. No, it doesn't mention the baking. even though he basically invented croissant.
That's the best bit. Right? Why would he? Right. Wow.
I mean, because the Kipfel, as it originally was a crescent shape, was a roll, but it was way less buttery, way more bready. It was more of a kind of roll. But then the Italians have got something similar too. Well, they've got the cornetto, which is very, very similar to a croissant, but it's softer.
Yeah.
So I do think the French love to claim the origin of things.
And there's always a story.
But lots of it comes from Eastern Europe. Yeah. And then it is transformed in France. It's often kind of turned into its what we think of its finished product, but it has deep roots in other places.
And that's similar to Danish pastries, which they're known as Danishes in America. And then in Denmark, they're known as Wienerbrød because they come from Vienna. And it's the same thing that I think there was a strike in Copenhagen. They imported loads of Viennese bakers. But then, like you say, that's been adapted somewhat.
Yeah.
So they brought their techniques with them. And now Danish pastries are, I think, their own thing.
Yeah, there's definitely a unique style.
But they got known as Danishes in America particularly because Woodrow Wilson had a Danish pastry chef at his wedding.
Oh, no way.
In 1915.
When you really dig into something, food just has traveled everywhere. And to me, what makes food interesting is what stamp is put on in different places. Yes. And I think sometimes having such ownership over something is a little bit reductive because when you really look into it, there was another origin to it and it was adapted by one person then moved to a different country. And that to me is the fascinating thing, how a food can travel and slowly evolve and change. And I think that's why I'm not opposed to things being adapted and changed, because that's what we've always done. Nothing ever stays
same
the
with
same.
Language.
Unless it's made massive and
Well, then I hate it. Yes.
You know, I'm really impressed that we've come this far through the episode, and we've done pretty well with our pronunciations. Because croissant is such a tricky word, and saying it when you go to buy one is always such a cringe yes. moment.
How do you pitch it? Like, yes. how authentic do you go? Yeah. There is definitely a pitch. For instance, in England, we would say champagne yeah. drink, right? No. Which isn't the authentic, like, champagne. But then you'd also, if you were to completely anglicise it, you would say champagne.
Yeah.
So like, you've got to find a balance so you don't look too pretentious, but you don't look too inauthentic, right?
It's that middle kind of French, but not too French, so you don't come off an arse.
You don't do the, my mate, actually, it was quite funny. We were on a French exchange and someone came around, we were in the cafe and they were like, quelque boisson? What would you like to drink? Mm-hmm. And he said, and he looked at the menu and he said, je voudrais un Lipton iced tea. It said on the menu, Lipton iced tea. And he was like, I wasn't going to say Lipton iced tea.
Time for our final lunchbox. And that is you, Jack.
Yes, I'm excited about this one. So before I open my lunchbox, have you heard of the cronut?
Unfortunately, yes. How could we escape them?
So in 2013, there was a New York pâtissier who's originally from France. He was called Dominique Ancel. And he came up with a croissant donut cross. So you imagine a ring of croissant dough, and then you deep fry it and glaze it and inject it with cream. I saw the machine. It was fascinating. It was like a metal plunger. And it has spikes. It looks very like injective
ones, yeah.
And then you put the cronut on top and then you squeeze it until it oozes out the side. Anyway, amazing example of kind of coming up with something new, but also there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
I would say it was one of the first sort of viral food trends. I think Instagram was just kicking off. And basically, this New York patisserie, it had queues outside the block. And it was a fascinating example of hype. And you might be waiting for weeks because you could sign up online, you could pre-book your cronut slot. And they were $5 each, which at the time was quite expensive. Mm. But people would go and scalp them. So they would only make 300 a day.
You could buy them on eBay.
And you could buy them on eBay. And they were $40 each, I see.
Whoa.
So you could make huge markups if you did this slightly unethical thing, buying more than one and then selling them online. But yeah, he's an amazing innovator. He's come up with the frozen s'more. Did you see that one?
Yeah.
Which is like a sort of a layer of chocolate and vanilla ice cream and then surrounded by marshmallow and scorched and served on a stick.
Oh, yeah.
You tried one, did you?
I queued up.
Did you?
This was after the hype had died a little bit, but I did queue up. It was probably around 2014, 2015.
Okay, so quite close to there.
Yeah, there was still definitely... I mean, he still gets queues today. Like, the bakery is still incredibly popular.
Wow.
They were very expensive for what they are. As much as I like respect what he does, and I think it's very impressive, he has a lot of responsibility to bear for the amount of hybrid pastries that have come since then.
Thing.
And some of them, not good.
Oh. So this basically sparked a massive trend in creating the next big cronut, basically.
Yeah.
And so people have started hybridizing everything. And so I thought, let's make a matrix. Picked about 13 pastries, and then I put them in a grid, and I combine the words. There is my matrix.
So good.
So the red ones don't exist on Google at all.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Orange ones exist on Google, but barely.
Green are
green
all
ones
real.
Exist. So we've got a quetzal, which is a croissant pretzel, and a muffiny, which is a muffin brownie.
Okay.
And a waffnut, which is a waffle donut.
Oh, that sounds great.
We've all had a waffnut. Yeah.
The muffins are particularly funny. The muffont and the muff cake and the muffosh and the muffle. We'll put this online because I think it's fun to click through.
What's a baguillosh?
A baguillosh. Brioche and bagel.
Oh, very nice.
But I thought I'd make one that didn't exist.
Aww.
So I have brought you guys some scoffles.
Ooh.
Is that a scone waffle?
Scone in a waffle shape.
Nice.
So sticking by the original etymology, I thought the cronut, the material is a croissant, but the shape is a donut. So the opposite would be the shape of a croissant, material of a donut, which would be called a doissant.
So people do make a doissant.
Do they?
So the word cronut became quite contentious.
Yes, because he trademarked it.
There was a whole debate about whether you can trademark the name of a food. but he did. So if you go to a lot of bakers, you'll notice they don't call it a crone. They call it something...
Crodo.
The names are terrible, but they often call it something different.
Also, I was reading about a bakery that was like explaining the crodo, and apparently there is a slight difference in how they make it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you may have trademarked the recipe as well.
Well, you can't trademark a recipe. It's impossible. You can copyright
a method
because it's literary work. But you cannot copyright the list of ingredients. That's why there's so much theft in cookbooks. Lots of people ripping off other people's recipes because it's almost impossible to actually protect.
So you just say, like, all these ingredients, but cook it for 5.5 minutes instead of five.
Yeah, your intro is legally... different. There's been whole books that have been ripped off by very famous people, which I'll tell you later. but yeah, the krona, he did get protection on the word, which is why they're called differently. But actually, the opposite way you were talking about, where it's a croissant shape but a donut mixture, I guess. Someone took whole croissants unbaked and then fried them and called those crodo, or so they're fried like a donut but made from croissant.
That's a Castilian pastry already, though.
Yeah, is it?
It's called like a shishu or a shu. It begins with an X. But that is just like fried croissant dough.
I sometimes wonder if the crone is a little bit Emperor's New Clothes. I don't know. It's like it's hard to know where just other traditions have been kind of brought together. It's excellent marketing, and like it's still popular like over 10 years later. Yeah, so he clearly hit on something very, very popular.
But I did do some meta-analysis. The one with the most combinations is the croissant. The ones that exist are quaffle, waffle and croissant.
Yeah.
Croissel, the pretzel croissant. Croffin, cronut, croiky. And is a cookie in a croissant.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, I've tried that.
Have you?
Bad. Very bad.
Oh, really? Is that just a chocolate chip croissant?
They put chocolate chip cookie dough on top of a croissant.
Oh, no.
I did try and
that's just
one.
Two different things squashed together.
Wasn't the best.
And a kweigel, which I guess is a bagel.
The most like Yiddish stuff.
And the one with the joint fewest are cheesecake, obviously, because you don't get like a cheese croissant or a cheese nut. And actually, weirdly enough, pretzels. The only one I could find was a preffel, which was a waffle pretzel.
Have you heard of the pikeken?
Oh, no. What is that? So
this is...
Is that like a tadukken?
Yes. Oh. So you make three cakes of three different flavors, but in each batter, you place a whole pie.
What?
So you make a cake batter,
you
pour it into a cake pan, you place a pie on top of it and put more cake batter
on top. Wait, what kind of pie?
Like a fruit pie, but inside each of the cakes, and then you layer them up. All three cakes and pies together as a three-layer cake with frosting, and it looked so heavy. Like, I don't know how you could eat any of it, but there's a guy who makes it every year and sells a lot of them.
I was going to say, I would still try it.
I also really want to know how much it costs, because you're buying a triple layer cake with three pies inside. If you're buying that commercially, that must be in like the over the hundreds of dollars.
I wouldn't suggest taking a bite from my scoffles. They are a day old already. And they're made with the plainest pastry, because a scone pastry isn't particularly decadent, right?
It's especially like a British scone. It's quite
not it's flour, water, or milk, actually.
Yeah.
I've already heard two pronunciations of...
Should we talk about that?
I think in the North, people generally say scone.
Well, it's more specific than that. It's not quite as north-south as that.
Okay.
So in Scotland, they all say scone. Well, mostly. It's the majority of scone. And then in Northern Ireland is also scone. So the Irish thing is a whole sectarian divide. People in the Republic say scone.
Really?
Yeah. And then there are pockets of scone. There's one in Essex. And then there's one quite big one around sort of Stoke-on-Trent going through Sheffield, Leeds and Yorkshire and the Hull. And so Yorkshire basically says scone. And everyone around them says scone.
Interesting. I'm from Yorkshire. Yeah, I'm from Bradford. So.
What's the word for a word that distinguishes between kinds of people in war and stuff? People ask you, like, how do you pronounce this word?
Oh, it's weird. But, identifying.
Yes.
Shibboleth,
Is that what a scone is?
So, I think scone? It's like asking in World War II that they would ask a potential German spy to describe the scorecard between, like, Gloucestershire and Worcestershire, because they would say Worcestershire. you can't get it right.
Do you want to start the debate on cream or jam first?
Oh, God.
I don't care. Really, whatever you want.
That's it it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
And you can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
Ed, do you have any parting recipes for us?
Well, by coincidence, a book I wrote 10 years ago, which is called French Bakes Made Simple, has just been republished as a 10th anniversary edition. So if you're looking for classic French pastry, kind of all the classics are covered in there. So there is one of my favorite French pastries, is, which we haven't talked about, is a religieuse, which is a nun, basically.
Okay.
And it's meant to be a pastry that looks like a nun. It's made from two bowls of choux pastry, and mine's made with blackcurrant. It's delicious.
Nice. Is it served with a couple of nun's farts on the side?
I was going to say, there's also boobs in there.
Yeah, I mean, my boyfriend says that I just keep making recipes that look like boobs. He's like, you've just made another boob pastry. So it's my new book.
Fantastic. I love boobs.
From 27.
Lovely. We'll leave you with this. From French chef Cédric Grolet, pastry is precision and imagination in balance, like poetry you can eat. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, me, Manu Henriot, and our special guest, Ed Kimber. It was mixed by Li Ying Li and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.